Once the sock starts off, there's the glaring question that goes throughout the entire party. The whole way through, there's a problem. The Miraglin were clearly not what it could have called one. It's without a question, it wasn't what it wanted. Schlock, Lekal, Anoshin. By Schlock, Lekal, Anoshin, it's clearly for yourself. Rashi was Daitcha. I need any Mitzavah. I'm not telling you to do it. Right? But in Sirius Shalach, if you want to, then go ahead and send Miraglin. It's a very, very strange question, a very strange thing to say altogether. That if you want to, go ahead and do it. Shabbat Yisrael, Amr Yishkar, Nashim Lomenu, then Esau asked for it. He said, we want Miraglin, we want to send out spies, we want to bring people, moving it to Eretz Yisrael. It's so strange that this is called as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved. Like Yisrael Hussam Moshe Mitzvah Paran, Al Pi Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu sent them out from Mitzvah Paran, by the mouth of God. It's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them, this is what I want you to do. What do you mean? It's clear that God didn't want this to happen. It's clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't involved in this. So what's going on? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it to happen, why didn't he just say no? Why didn't he just say no to everybody else? And also, why would Moshe Rabbeinu go about with this in the first place? If he had any doubts, he should have stopped right there. And he should have said, we're done. There's nothing else going on. There's no reason for us to get involved. Another big question is Yoshua. Yoshua's name was added onto the extra Yud. An added Yud that was put onto his name. Why are we doing this here? Precious Mishpatim by a mullet when he reached the war against someone, he already said that his name was Yoshua. Yoshua was already given as a name. So why in the world are we giving you a different... Why are we saying over here that this is where his name was changed? It wasn't changed. It was changed beforehand. It was at a different point. What's going on over here? It says in his fit. His fit says the following. It says, when Bnei Yisrael first left Arsina, when they first left Arsina, they assumed they'd go into Eretz Yisrael, crazy miracles, that everything would be awesome for them, they would have absolutely no problems, they would be way above nature, there wouldn't be any issue, and they wouldn't need miracles. That's what they assumed. They assumed miracle after miracle after miracle would happen, there'd be no issues. But these past few travels, when they went this way and that way, and they went one way and the other, it took their toll on Bnei Yisrael. It took their toll on what they were doing. They couldn't live pure miraculous lives. They couldn't take the money. They couldn't understand what the money on covered were all about. And they were getting annoyed. Every time a new miracle happened, they got annoyed by these special things, and they complained about it. They were worried. Rightly so. They were worried that maybe the best path for them to take is not the miraculous path. Maybe the best thing for them to do is to live physical lives. I'll get a little bit of extra tiyat in Shmaya, but it would still be physical lives, and they'd be able to work their way, and that's that. Being too close to the king's talent does damage a person. The closer you are, the more prone you are to injury. And that means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is always going to have his sight on you, and if he's doing the slightest thing wrong, he nails you for it. So maybe we should back off, said Bnei Yisrael. Let's do it on the outside. Let's do it naturally. Let's not ask for a crazy miracle and go into our straw and all the people die in front of us. We'll go in, we'll wage a war in a natural way. We know a Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us, so we're not going to have anyone die, and we know that it's going to work out for the best. Here's what ended up happening. That choice was made only after Eldad and Medad came around. Eldad and Medad were absolutely unbelievable people that came up with the Nebuah. Moshe made Yoshua Machnas. Moshe's going to die. Yoshua's going to bring Bnei Yisrael in. They knew Yoshua. Yoshua fought for them before. He fought against the Amalek. And when he fought against the Amalek, it was a natural, physical war. He didn't go in and just kill Amalek. Amalek just died on the ground. It was a physical war where he went in with weapons. Bnei Yisrael went in with weapons. And by Yakalosh, Yoshua the Amalek. They were able to weaken Amalek and take them down a little bit. That's the idea of what Eldad and Medad stood for. They saw that, and when they saw that Yeshua was going to be in charge, they realized now is the time to ask for this. Now is the time to ask. Now, some of you, this is crucial. Getting involved in these things and letting it be a natural war, letting Miraglin get involved and spies going in. Now, that's dangerous. There's no question. But Bnei Yisrael wasn't in a state to argue with them. So it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu looking at us and saying, you know what the best thing is for every human being in the world? For us to just learn Torah all day long. But he can't demand that of us because it's impossible. None of us can learn all day long. It's an impossibility. In the state that we're in the position that we are, there's no way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can ask it from us. And it's unfortunate he wants so badly to offer that to us. That's the times of Mashiach. But he can't keep that to us right now. So at the point where they're at right now, this is the new Sikui of Hashem. this became where they are right now, where their state of being is, where their mindset is. This is now the Al-PSM, exactly what Akash Baruch Hu wants. That's been his idea. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky adds on, Moshe saw when everyone came to him, they came in a huge group. They did not come in order with the Sinaim in front and the big rabbis after that, and then the younger men, the Balabasim coming after that, and then the kids in the back. It was everybody coming in a massive, massive mixture. Just huge amounts of people in our Vuvia, the Medrash calls. What kids were in front, the elders were in the back. Everybody's pushing themselves around saying, I want to get my word in for Moshe Rabbeinu. I want to be able to say something to Moshe Rabbeinu. No sense of order whatsoever. Children pushing everyone out of the way. No Seder. This would be serious lack of Kavod HaTorah. And when you have a serious lack of Kavod HaTorah, that always leads to problems. Always leads to issues. The real problem here, says Yaakov Kamenetsky, was their lack of bitachon and emunah, not only in Hashem, but in their leaders, in their own leaders, in the Talmid HaChachamim that were in charge of them. That was the problem. They knew Hashem said it would be okay. They realized that, but they're coming in a huge group, as if to say, if we go in right now, we're all going to die. They hadn't even seen the place. They don't even know who's in charge of the place. But they're giving a massive interest, and we got to know right now, what should we do? What should we do, Moshe? Moshe looks at them and says to them, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. You can't be involved in stuff like this. It would be great to have a crazy miracle. And by the way, had they not gone up and asked for miraculum, there's no question that's exactly what would have happened. They would have walked into Eretz Yisrael, and either the people would have all dropped dead, the evil people would have dropped dead, and the other people would have just run away, or something else would have happened. In which they wouldn't have had to lift a finger. They wouldn't have had to lift up a weapon. There would be no serious war, and it would have been immediately as if Bnei Yisrael was going into Olam Haba. But they no longer felt that was possible. That's the sad truth behind everything. You still need Hashem's input, right? So let's say you want to get Hashem's input on something. You want to figure out what to do when it comes to how you want to fight this nation. So we have this throughout our history. What do you do when you want to find out what a Kodesh Baruch Hu's idea is when it comes to, now granted, a Navi always works, but there's something that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has already set up for this type of system, that when you need to ask a question, you ask it and I'll answer you. What do you have? Urim Bitumen. Obviously, the Urim Bitumen. The Urim Bitumen has one massive issue with it. Massive issue. It doesn't answer what you need to know. It answers what you ask. So when they ask what they're supposed to do, and the example is that everybody knows by two letters from people. At the end of Shofi, you have them Shofi, you have to not a senator, they're like, hear you, you should really do Shofi. Shofi is my everything, is in Shofi and Shmuel. Shmuel Beis and Malachim Aleph, Malachim Beis comes with time. Shofi and Shmuel Aleph, everything you need to know about them. Everything. It has everything in it. All right there. What happens at the end of Shofi? The legacy of people. There's a crazy myself with this woman who is crazy. Repeatedly at night, and she was killed. And Bnei Yisrael decides to go to war against Binyamin. They call in the Urim Bitumen, and they say to the Urim Bitumen, who should go up first? They did not ask, should we fight a war against Binyamin? They said, who should go up first? And they were answered, go up first, go ahead. And they didn't ask it the right way, so they weren't answered the right way. They went in, and 40,000 people from Shevet Yehuda were killed. They asked it again. Is it time for us to go up again? They didn't ask, should we fight the war? They asked again, should we go up? And in that case, the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, go up. And they went up again, and again they were slaughtered from in front of Bnei Binyamin. Again, 30,000 people were killed. So the third time they asked it in a good way. They said, should we fight or should we not fight? Is this the right thing to do or not the right thing to do? And then the Urim Bitumen answered that. Because that's what the Urim Bitumen is. It is the same thing as asking a Rav. A Rav, when you have a Shaila, and you have to ask something, and the Rav hears your Shaila, all he's going to hear is what you told him. He's not a mind reader. He has no idea what's going on behind the scenes. He can only answer according to what you hear. When I get a text message with a random question, some of these random questions that I get, you can't really answer them. According to what you're saying to me, the answer is yes, or the answer is no. The answer is I don't know. According to what you're asking me. But there's so much more to these types of shilas. You have to ask so many questions in order to get involved to go out and get that. That a Rav can't know, and that's the point behind Urim Bitumen. Urim as well. When they went up to the Urim B'Tumim, they asked the wrong question. They should have said, is it a good idea to send out Merazim? In their state, it was. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have told them, it's not the greatest. And B'nai Yisrael wouldn't have done it. It wouldn't have happened. But they didn't ask that. They said, who should go? Who should go in? And they were given a list of names. They were given a list of names that came out. Reuven should have Shamua ben Zakur. Shimon should have Shaphat ben Kori. Yehuda should have Kalev ben Yefuna. And they were given a list of names, all pointed out from the Urim and Tumim. This was not Moshe Rabbeinu coming down and telling B'nai Yisrael. This is the Urim and Tumim, says Rabbi Yaakov, who was telling them exactly what it was. That's Al Pi Hashem. Everything here was Al Pi Hashem. Was it exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted? No, but that's not what they asked. They didn't ask that. So if you don't ask correctly, then you're answered Al Pi Hashem by the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what you ended up coming out. As soon as they saw this, Yoshua's name by the Urim B'Tumim was spelled Hoshea Ben Nun. And they understood immediately there's something wrong. Because Hoshea's name is not Hoshea. It should be Yehoshua. There's something going on here. What happened? That's what made Moshe Rabbeinu daven for Yoshua. Because there's something wrong, and he knew there was something wrong going in. When he first heard the Merazim, he thought it was a great idea, according to the status of the people at their time. But now, he hears there's something up, so he immediately reaffirms the name of Yoshua, and says, no, Yoshua is known with the Yud. Yoshieich me'atzas Merazim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help you from the hate of the Merazim, because unfortunately, even though they weren't ready for it, this Al Pi Hashem, there's something going on, there's something wrong. The Kedushas Levi adds on a huge point. Moshe Rabbeinu added on three things on his own. He did three things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not say, and he did it anyway. One of the famous ones is breaking the luchos. We all know about that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Geisher Kofafa Sheshimarta. He did a good thing in breaking it. And another famous thing is he added on an extra day for Shavuot. There's a machlokas when Shavuot is. Vav Sivan or Zion Sivan. Vav Sivan is when we celebrate it nowadays. In Eretz Yisrael, it's only Vav Sivan. In American Chutzlars, we do it Vav Sivan and Zion Sivan. We do it both days. Matan Torah, it's machlokas in Shabbos. It's amazing, no? We have a machlokas when exactly Yom Tov was. There's a machlokas in Gemara Shabbos around Peichet. I don't remember. It might be Peichet Menalov, where it says it's either Vav Sivan or Zion Sivan. It's machlokas when Shavuos was. Did Moshe Rabbeinu add on an extra day to give Bnei Yisrael an extra day on their own? It says the Kedushas Levi were blatant in the religion. What's the point of adding on an extra day? What does that mean? You're going to add on an extra day for Shavuos. What does that mean? I mean, it's also strange. We stay up all night on the night of the 6th to be mitzvahing Bnei Yisrael for falling asleep that night. That night wasn't Matan Torah. Matan Torah didn't happen on the 6th of Sivan. It happened on the 7th of Sivan. It's Mamash Apella. Shavuos is the only Chag that also it changes with every year. Back in the day when there was Kiddush Levana, going on, it's not like Pesach, 15th of Nisan every year. Sukkot, 15th of Sukkot, 15th of Tishrei every year. Shavuos is 50 days after the second day of Pesach. Whenever the second day of Pesach is, however many days there are in Nisan, if there's 29 or 30 days, right, or however many days there are in a year, 29 or 30 days, it's either the 5th, 6th, or 7th of Sivan. It's an unbelievable Chag. Why does it switch around like that? Because we have a machlokas when Shavuos even happens. We have absolutely no idea when Shavuos might have happened. It was 50 days after Matan Torah, but it might have been the 51st day. Because Moshe Rabbeinu had it on a day. And what was his point? His idea was brilliant. He said, listen, we get too much from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we're given these orders, you know, mala, something from up above that comes down and affects us, that does something to us and affects us wrongly. It doesn't do the right thing to us. If we're good and we do only good things and we never sin, then Baruch Hashem, things turn out for the best. But if Chas V'Shalom, when we do something wrong, then we have no chance of getting any better. No chance of working anything out. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Bnei Yisrael to want it. So when they said, alright, we're supposed to get Matan Torah tomorrow, it was as if they were forced. We're going to get Matan Torah. We're going to have Matan Torah on the 6th. It wasn't even our choice. God is just forcing it on us. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, no. We're pushing it off again. Let's see if you guys really want it. And Bnei Yisrael wanted it. They said, no, we want it. We want it. We want it. And Moshe Rabbeinu pushed it off so that there would be these orus no mata. They'll say, we've been waiting for this. Why are you pushing it off a day, Moshe Rabbeinu? It would show that they really, really wanted it. And that means that even when a person sins, this will help you. Because you'll still have that Yisforus Momato. Even when you don't learn for a long time, you still have that little, that guy inside you that's screaming at you saying, go learn, go learn. It's always there and there's nothing you can do to get rid of it. That was what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe Rabbeinu ledaito lishitaso. This was his shita. His shita was make sure the Bnei Yisrael do it on their own, not just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. So when he brought in the Erev Rav into Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should I let in the Erev Rav? And Hashem's like, sort of a good idea. If you want to, go ahead and do it. Who would do that? Who would bring in the Erev Rav when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, I don't know, it might be a good idea, it might be a bad idea. That's Moshe Rabbeinu's shita. His shita is, it shouldn't be straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It should be they decide that they want to come in. It should be us working on ourselves, making the Erev Rav better. That's the idea behind it. Instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us everything, it's better if we work on it on our own. That's why the Dora Midbar, the generation of the desert, never had a chelek in Olam Haba. They couldn't get a chelek in Olam Haba because their whole door, the whole generation, they didn't do it on their own. They got it straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They had the Mon, they had Ananiah, Kavod, they had the Erso Miriam. When they died in the Midbar, they don't deserve a chelek in Olam Haba. They got it in Olam Hazeh. What's better than having Mon that tastes like anything, a Be'er that has a drink like anything, and they're protected from everything on the outside, and you're learning Torah all day? That was their Olam Haba. You couldn't get any better than that. This is the concept. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid if they only went in to Eretz Yisrael because a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants them to and assures them that it's all good, and they go in just with that, then whenever they sin, they'll be taken down. Whenever they sin, it's all up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If we're on the level to accept his Yisorus, everything's all good. And if we're not, then we're done. There's nothing we can do. That's what Rashi means by L'daitcha, Shlach L'cha, L'daitcha, according to your das, Moshe Rabbeinu, you want Bnei Yisrael to work on it on their own, the Meraglim is a great idea. The Meraglim is a tremendous idea. If you want that, then it's better for you, and it's better for them later if they do well. But unfortunately, it also gets the Sultan involved. That gets the Sultan involved in everything you do, and it's still all Piyashan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still involved, whether it's directly, the way that it's said, it's just another level, the second level down, or indirectly, that you ask me the wrong question, so I'll give you the wrong answer. That's according to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, or maybe even a little bit more so. So that it's better for Klal Yisrael, Lefishitas Moshe Rabbeinu. That's according to the Kedushas Levi. Either way, it was definitely Al Pi Hashem. There's no question that there was something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Now here, we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu asked Bnei Yisrael, the Meraglim that went inside, he asked them, Hayesh Ba'eitz, is there a tree there, Im Ayin, or not? What does the Eitz refer to? So Rashi refers to a Tzadik. Is there a Tzadik in Eretz Yisrael that can protect all of Eretz Yisrael, or not? Here's the first question. Number one, Im Ayin makes no sense. Im Ayin is completely unnecessary. Hayesh Ba'eitz, is there a tree? Obviously, if there isn't, then you don't have to say yes. You can say no. Is there a tree? The answer is yes or no. You don't have to say Im Ayin. That's a waste of space. Every other thing makes a lot of sense. Go up and see the land. Go see Hakazaku Arafet. Are they strong or are they weak? Meaning, find out how strong they are, how weak they are. There's different levels of that. You can say Hatna'atu Imrav. Is there a little bit of them or is there a lot of them? Find out how many there are. And you can say, again, there's levels of each. But this idea, Hayesh Ba'eitz Im Ayin, is there a tree or not? It's just, is there a tree? That's all I gotta know. And you'll answer the question, yes or no. That's all it is. That's number one. Number two, how are you gonna find this guy? How in the world are you gonna go in and find out if there's a tzaddik that's that great? What were they gonna do? Were they gonna interview every guy from every city? And they're like, hey guys, do you have a real big tzaddik here? I mean, and go to every city and ask them that? It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. How would they know? How would they know? Is that a brilliant question? Sounds so pretty, it's a brilliant man. It's unbelievable. And what if he was a hidden tzaddik? What if he was hiding himself? They're like, oh yeah, well, we don't have a big tzaddik here. We do have Gipple the tailor. It's not a Hasidic story. I mean, how are you supposed to know? Like, who in the world is a big tzaddik? What was the job? They weren't even told anything. How are you supposed to know that? Here's the pshat. You should know there's three different types of people that are known as protection for Klal Yisrael. One is known as Eitz, others are known as Shemesh, and others are known as Magid. Shemesh is the sun that gives off Shefa. Magid is a shield that protects them from evil. And then there's an Eitz. What's an Eitz? What does the Eitz do? What does the tree do? So a tree continues to grow, unlike a shield, and unlike the Shemesh, which both have their stagnancy, stay as they are, and that's that. Right? An Eitz keeps growing bigger. If you're already in its shade, then when it gets bigger, you're going to stay inside its shade. And if you're not in its shade yet, as it gets bigger and bigger, then you're going to be in its shade eventually. Plus, it gives off fruit. There's a second thing, that it gives off fruit and allows other things to be there as well. That makes a better refuge than a rock or a tent or anything like that, because it does everything for you. so too tzaddikim are similar to trees. Tzaddikim protect people. They get stronger as they get older. And the older they get, the greater they are. And they add on to their own protection as they go on, while still maintaining their shiftless and their anivos, thinking that they're not worthy of all this. That type of a person is extremely rare. Who's protecting everybody, knows he's protecting everybody, is enough to be able to give up fruit and have talmidim that can continue to protect people, and yet still remain in honor, and still think that he's absolutely nothing in comparison to what he possibly could do. When Moshe told them to look around for a tzaddik, he wasn't asking for just any tzaddik, Hashem, as you're mugging. He was asking specifically for an eight. If there's a tree there, someone who's a real anav as well, that power can combat mine. And that power can go up against mine, and that's a problem. How are you supposed to find someone like that? It gives me a mean thing. I'm adding on a lot to the chasam sofer, but this is what you need to just say. Very short. It means like this. We all know that the Eretz of Miriam came in the Slus of Miriam, obviously, right? The Nani HaKavod came in the Slus of Aaron. Hapori Tzukas Shalom Aleinu, right? That's supposed to be the idea of what Aaron is supposed to be for us. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the month. Moshe gave us our food. Last week's Parsha, when there was a whole discussion of we want meat, Moshe Rabbeinu said, how can I give meat? He had no concept of physicality. If the food is coming in my Slus, says Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't give them Gashmias. It's impossible. I have no sheikhs to Gashmias. So how could I give them meat? He's not denying God's abilities. He's stating fact. If it's all because of me, I can't give something physical. There's nothing I can do. So what do you want me to do? And that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu said, add on Zakanim. And the food will come in the schus of the Zakanim, and then you'll get the slug. That's why the slug came after he made the 70 Zakanim, the 70 elders, because it had to be in their schus, not his. It was impossible. Tzaddikim of every generation give food, parnasa, mizonos to that generation. This past week we just learned the Gemara, Chaf Dalet Amud Beis in Tainis. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's schus gave food to everyone in the world. The whole world was nizun from Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa himself got a cob of carob every single week. Tiny little bit of buxers. If you ever had buxers in your life, you'll never have them again. And that's all he had every single week. On my block, on 3100 block in Jarvis, there's a weird looking house. It's the fourth house from the corner. And it's got this weird, it's like shaped like a tent. It's like the weirdest thing you've ever seen before in your life. In the front lawn of that person's house, he built the house himself. Don't ask questions. I never do. And in the front lawn of that guy's house, there's a buxer tree. It's not the same buxers you get in Eretz Yisrael, but it's a buxer tree. So every time I go by with my kids whenever they're in the room, and they look like these big green pea pods that you would never eat if you were given $1 billion. So if you look at them, I would say, like, that's what Roshim Bar Yochai ate for 13 years. Every single day for 13 years. And they would have like a tiny little bit. And it is the most disgusting thing ever. And I'm like, I know. It's great. That's what Rechaniah Mendoza. That's what Rechaniah Mendoza had. That's what all these tzaddikim have. Tzaddikim are enough. They forgive off their parnasa, their shefa to everyone else in the world, because the whole world is nizun from them. That's the whole point of them. That they get it from them themselves. That's the idea. Here, the Chasam Sofer says, is how you find out if there's an eitz or not. Eat the food in Eretz Yisrael. Take from the food, and specifically after he asks, Hayesh ba eitz im ayin. It means there's different levels of taste in the trees in Eretz Yisrael, in the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. Taste the fruit. See what it's like. See what kind of shepherd it's brought into the land. Is it more physical? Is it more spiritual? And that's these chazaktem ulakasimi priyaret. Therefore, be strong. Take from the fruit yourselves. But Yami made the Korean up. It was just in time for grapes. That's what Chasam Sofer brings. No makor for this. The greatest way of figuring out if there's a tzaddik in the city is by tasting the wine. Tasting the wine from the grapes of that city. Absolutely no idea why. It doesn't say anything whatsoever. They looked at it and they thought to themselves, look at these fruits. They're huge. They're massive grapes. It takes 8 of us to bring a cluster back. One guy is holding a fig. One guy is holding a pomegranate. These fruits are huge. They must have an eight, and it must be the strongest guy in the world. Ki chazaku mimenu, the Meraglim said. They have to be stronger than us. They're stronger than God. They're the most strong people in the world. Look at these things. We've never seen anything like this before. To which Moshe then said, that's the Gashmias. Don't ask about Gashmias. Eretz Yisrael is a Gashmi place. You want to taste it for its Ruchnias. What kind of spiritual condition are these fruits in? And when he tasted it and realized it was just Gashmi, he said, this is garbage. They don't have an ace. They've got absolutely nothing. Eve was either dead or you've never existed at that time. He wasn't there at that time. Whatever it was, but there's no apes. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu came out with versus what the Meraglim came out with. It was an argument on whether or not there was someone that was that great. One more idea. The Nesiv says only 20 to 60 was the age of those people that died. From the age of 20 to 60, with the 19-year-olds all like sitting around doing nothing, and the 19-year-olds were like, I don't know, I'll go to Eretz Yisrael. Like every 19-year-old, there was not one 19-year-old that was like, yeah, let's stay out. Not one kid got up there. Not one. None of them died over the age of 60. Every man, as soon as they hit 60, there were 60 in one day, they were just like, yeah, I think we should still go in. And the guy who was a day younger than him was like, what are you talking about? We shouldn't go in. Is that real? What in the world is 20 to 60 have anything to do with it? Now, women, I don't have a problem with. The Kli Yakar says at the very beginning of Shlach, that Shlach Lecha on Nashim, for yourself, you should bring in a Nashim. Had you sent in Nashim, had you brought in women, then no problems would have happened, because they love land, they love Eretz Yisrael, so you won't have any issues whatsoever. That's what would have happened had you brought in women. Pretty unbelievable, right? I would have thought they'd just get lost. There's no GPS. They don't have any directions. I would assume that would happen immediately. It'd just be like, wait, do we turn left here? Where do we go? We have to ask directions. Well, the guys are just like, well, keep going. That would be fine. I would assume that that's the reason why it was much easier to be able to send the Anashim more than the Anashim. But it seems strange. Why is it only 20 to 60? The obvious answer, says the Nesiv, is that 20 to 60 were the people who were fighting. If they were the people who were fighting, that this war, then they were the people who were complaining, saying, we don't want to go in because we're going to fight, we're going to lose, we're going to all die. That's the obvious answer, right? But there's problems. Okay, let's say you turn 20 between Chavtes Sivan, when they were sent out, and Tisha B'Av, when they came back. Let's say you turn 20 then. Did those guys die? Or did they not die? They still complained. But did they die? The Gemara says no. B'Vasar Kuf Chaf Aleph says they didn't die. Only those who were 20 from Chavtes Sivan until whatever, 20 to 60 at that point, even if they turned 20 a few days later, they didn't die. Says over. What's going on here? How in the world did those guys not die? They were going to fight in Eretz Yisrael, so why wouldn't they go? And you don't think that it was suffering, even if you weren't fighting the war itself, you didn't think there would be suffering by the kids or the older men that were standing on the outside waiting for the war to happen? You think it was just easy times for them? They're just eating these huge grapes and sitting down in hammocks? Obviously, they're still part of the war, they're just not fighting. They're still involved, they're just not doing everything. Says Chasam Sofer. Don't think for a second that these guys didn't have any type of Yisurin. Everyone that complained had Yisurin. But here's the difference. If you hang out in a group, and you're in a huge group, a bunch of guys together, and you're protesting in downtown Chicago over the fact that NATO is here, and you hate NATO, and you don't have a job, and you're really upset, and you're just like, down with government! Okay? And you're going there. It doesn't matter that you don't really care, and you're just there for the sightseeing. If you're in that group, you're going to be beaten senseless by policemen. It's just going to happen. The tear gas is still going to affect you. No matter how much you say, I'm just here because I wanted to be. I don't really agree with them. The tear gas doesn't affect, we're sorry, let me put a gas mask on you. It doesn't matter. If you're around at the time, you're going to be beaten up. If you're around that group, you're gone. It doesn't matter how vociferous you are or how non-vociferous you are. It doesn't matter. If you're there, you're dead. It's a natural occurrence of you being around these types of people. The people from the ages of 20 to 60, even if they didn't want to complain, they came as a group en masse to be able to go to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they said, we're fighting, we don't want to fight, get us out of here. Everybody else were not considered part of that group. They may have complained. They may have gone in with them, but they weren't part of that group. There's no question they got Yisurin. There's no question they were punished. They got some type of punishment. Okay. But if they're in that group, they just died.
Okay, we're talking about Hashem. You're not talking about like Chicago Police Department and their high IQ.
Even more.
You're talking about like, yeah. You know, saying, and you're also talking about like, it's just before you say the Eagle were a specific group of people who ever participated got nailed and everybody else went.
Exactly. Well, we don't have that. Remember, there were three deaths. The Eagle itself is the perfect example. There's two perfect examples. One is Makkos Bechoros, where Bnei Yisrael had to do something in order to not be killed by the Malach HaMavis, because the Bechoros could have been killed anyway. We have pity on Ben. We have a pity on Bechor because some people should have been killed because they should have been there and the Malach HaMavis should have gotten them, but because of the blood, they were stopped. I mean, right there you see that when the Malach HaMavis is given permission, he kills anyone in that group. Anyone around, he has the ability to kill. It's Ke'ilu, he's given Rishus. And that's the exact same thing by the Eagle Azov. There were certain people who died by the sword by the Bnei Levi. There were other people who died by drinking the water of the gold as if it was Mesota. And there were other people who died by a plague. There were three different deaths because there were certain Yisurin that happened for every person depending on how involved they were with the Eagles of, and everybody else.
Well, if Burke was involved, then there is, I mean, can do whatever you want.
We obviously know that a Kodesh Baruch Hu can do anything, and that's obvious, right? But the fact is, whenever anything happens, it's always HaKadosh Baruch Hu has rules. The rules that He set up the world with is through Midas Adin with Rachamim. And no matter how we look at it, we say, well, God can do anything, and He can, obviously, He allows the world to run the way that He originally planned it. And the way that He originally planned it is that you have a group of people who are supposed to die together, they will die together. Even if some of them may have been more, I don't know, into it than the other ones, if you're part of that group, if you consider yourself part of that group, you're automatically gone. There's only one thing that could have stopped this, and Moshe Rabbeinu could have davened. Had Moshe Rabbeinu davened, he could have stopped. Some of them still would have died. The guys who were really against it, those guys would have died. But some of them would have survived. When Korach saw that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't daven, that was the immediate reaction. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you could have saved them. You could have said, how in the world are you causing 600,000 people to die over a period of the next 40 years? You couldn't daven, Moshe Rabbeinu? Of course you could daven. So why didn't you daven? So it's a huge kasha. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu daven? He was the only one who was able to do it. And here's the issue. Moshe Rabbeinu already knew that he wasn't going to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Mace, Yoshua Machnas, he already knew that. He cannot daven for something that applies to him. He can't daven for someone that a Kodesh Baruch Hu paskins to not go into Eretz Yisrael. Something that he has shaykhus to. He can't daven for that. The idea is called Ein HaChavush Matir Atzmo Vibes HaYisurin. A guy who is captured in jail cannot release himself from jail. The concept is brought up four different times in Shas. Reb Yochanan, when he got very, very sick, was able to heal. He was able to heal others when they got very, very sick immediately by just picking up his hand. But when he got sick, he couldn't heal himself. Because Ein HaChavush Matir Atzmo Vibes HaYisurin. When David HaMelech was being thrown down by Goliath, he knew the shameless of Hashem to be able to save himself. But when that happens, Ein HaChavush Matir Atzmo Vibes HaYisurin, he couldn't daven for them. What he could daven for is for them not to die immediately. For them to die over the next 40 years. For all of them to reach the ripe old age of 60. And that way live until that age and then die. He davened for that. And that worked. That worked. That was a pure tefillah. But anything else he couldn't daven for. He couldn't daven for them to get into Eretz Yisrael. It's a crazy little lesson for us on what we can daven for and not. Anything that you're not shaykh to, you can't daven for others. And that's another discussion for another time. But that's the concept of Ein HaChavush Matir Atzmo Vibes HaYisurin. Very quickly, why is it still Al Pi Hashem even though we didn't want this? We answered with three different answers. That was including Moshe's Shita to help in Yisrael. How an eight protects others. We went into what the eight is and how it would have protected them. And then 20 to 60, nobody else sinned? Of course they sinned. They were punished severely. But it was different punishments for them. And then there was the group. And the group was different. And Moshe Rabbeinu could not daven for them. So, guys, have a good